Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Prepare Radio with your host, Diane Thomas.
Good morning and welcome to Prepare Radio. This is Diane Thomas, your host. We're talking a little bit today about some misconceptions I think we have about the whole idea of being at rest. And probably the biggest one is that it's a reflection of inactivity and passivity and submission and just basically going with the flow without understanding, without knowledge, without agreeing with the flow. And we often look at what Jesus did when he was here on this earth, and we think of him going through the temptation and through the crucifixion, and we see him just, you know, sometimes we see him as just going along with what the Father wanted him to do, and that he had such faith in his Father, faith in his God, that he endured out of his own strength or out of his own faith in basically blind obedience. And what I think we want to look at instead as Jesus is this pattern or example, rather. There's only one Jesus. And by the way, there's only one you. Whoever you are, there's only one of you. So to try to think that you're ever going to find a one-size-fits-all example or pattern to follow, that's precisely the opposite of what God wants you to do. He instead wants you to develop a unique relationship with him, because you are a unique person. So there's not categories or types, and he's not saying, well, I'm going to speak to you this way because this is how you're gifted. Instead, he wants to develop a relationship that is going to change over time. And as your senses are tuned, you're going to hear him differently over time and speak with him differently and talk to him differently. And his name for you might change. Your name for him might change. But one of the things we all need to get over is this notion that whatever God wants to do in our lives, he's going to do it, and we can just, almost as a bystander, let it happen. But when we look at, again, at Jesus' life, what we really see was the result of his knowing his Father and having learned how to hear and depend on him and get his life from the Spirit, from his own nature, rather than his soul or his body or his environment. What he really learned to do was actively participate in everything God was doing in his life. He knew what he learned and knew what he was here for. He knew he was being prepared for something. He knew he was being trained for something, and he took it seriously. And the ultimate expression of that we very often see as the greatest expression of passivity or submission, and that's the cross. We think, yes, there were so many times when if he could just said this, that, or the other thing, he could have gotten out of it. There were so many people who didn't want to crucify him. But that really wasn't the greatest challenge for him. When we think of Jesus as the Son of God, he had all the power, all the knowledge, the understanding. He could have come down from that cross just by letting that thought cross his mind. His warfare was not in enduring the cross, but resisting the notion of getting out of it. With a single thought, he could have undone time or the earth, let alone the circumstances he was in. But he knew what he was trained for, what he had been sent for, what his job was, what his project was here on this earth. And he embraced it and knew that the culmination of it was not going to be an outward activity, but an inward activity. And I think for many of us, we have that same misconception about rest, about this whole idea of being at rest. Now, rest is not just being at peace in our emotions or inactive in our actions. Rest is actually the bedrock expression of our being in a dependent relationship with God. And, you know, there's so many things that we've talked about over and over again that dovetail one into another. So we'll try to keep the rabbit trailing to a minimum. But one of the major ways we are healed, and God wants you whole, he wants to completely heal you here on this earth, whatever it is, unless he tells you different, he wants to heal you. And again, that's another reason we want to be able to hear him clearly. Because if there's an area that he wants to heal you, and we say, well, God just wants me to, if he wants me healed, he'll heal me, or he's teaching me something, when he really wants to heal you, but it may take a special effort or a change on your part. By you saying, well, if he really wanted me healed, he'd heal me, without asking him, that's presumption. That's living out of your flesh. That's building, that's using, continuing to use your crutch, even though God has healed your broken leg. You don't need that crutch, but you're insisting on it rather than learning to walk. And right there is a great illustration. We think that because a crutch is easier, or a wheelchair even is easier, or laying around and being quiet before him is easier and quieter, that that's more of a reflection of rest. But it's not. It's a means to an end. We rest, we are quiet with him, so that we can carry that quietness throughout the rest of our day, so that we can reinforce the quietness, the rest, that he is already building within us. We use a crutch when we are wounded so we can heal. It's not to become a way of life. I know of one story where there was a healing ministry in town, and they were bringing people that were in wheelchairs to the front. And this was a this was way back when there was actually real healing ministries and there was not the shenanigans that go on today. They are bringing people in wheelchairs to the front so they could be healed more easily. And it was happening. It was not, again, the contrivances that they have today. Now, there were some back then, but... And one of the helpers saw an elderly man come in pushing his supposed wife, or assumed wife, in a wheelchair and invited them to come up front. And he shook his head, no, no. And so the gentleman asked the woman in the wheelchair, would you like to come up front and be healed by God? And she said, no. And the helper was shocked and said, well, why ever not? And her response was, I've looked after my husband for 50-some years. Now it's his turn to look after me. So she was getting something out of being in that wheelchair. And very often, that's what rest does. Living in rest, it exposes where we've been living out of our flesh. It reveals how we have been trying to control our environment. Now, one of the big examples that in this ministry, and I'm sure in many ministries, that comes to the surface is this whole idea in marriage, and somewhat between parents and children, but mostly in marriage, that's we really have to get over this whole idea of submission, submitting one to another, and resting in that. And that as long as, you know, there's these supposed roles, and yet when you look at what that's all about is one to another as spirit beings, not as flesh beings, not as two people living out of their flesh. But marriage is a typology. It's not a holy matrimony. It's not a holy state. Certainly not. And when we add to, even, you know, for those who have that high regard for the scriptures, one of the things it says is don't add to it. And when we add to it by saying God, you know, makes a holy marriage when he unites us together, that's not in the scriptures anywhere. And then when we try to build on that misconception that there's something special about it. Now, societal effects, certainly there is something special about a marriage relationship. And we won't go into that right now. But just be aware that odds are what you believe about being married or being single or what age you are, what gender, odds are that's not what God believes. Those are all things about you. Those are not you. And very often, when you think about it, if God has placed each one of us here on this earth to learn to both submit and take authority, have authority, be the authority, exercise authority. And if we have this idea that in a particular relationship, like marriage, one person has the submissive behavior and the other has the authority behavior, how much is each member in that relationship being robbed of the opportunity to do both. When God says to any one of us, I want you to learn to rule and reign and through dependence on me, and we say, okay, God, as long as you don't touch this relationship that involves 99% of my time, 99% of my being, 99% of my decisions, you can have the 1%. But I already have this part taken care of. I know that as a husband, as a wife, this is what I'm supposed to do. Don't mess with that, God. I know that this pleases you, so don't try to tell me different. That if I behave in this particular way, if I'm the head of the house and I am a, you know, exemplify you to my kids, that this is what a man does and this is the authority that he takes, and I expect obedience and I expect submission and I have the right answers regardless of whether I really do or not, because I'm the head of the house and God gives me that authority. That's a lie. He doesn't give you any authority because you're a man. He doesn't give you any authority because you think you're the head of the house. Likewise for the wife, for the woman in the house, women in the house. How terrible to think that God can't have free reign in your life and that you have chosen to live like that. How are you to learn to develop your own judgment, to exercise the authority that God has given you, and to waste the relationship that he's put you in by declaring and defining your own position in it without recognizing the training opportunity it is? What if instead God wants you both to learn to exercise the authority he's already given you and both of you to learn to submit to one another? But that would give opportunity to the other to mess up your plans. What if so many of you women have all these problems with your husbands, but to say that to your husband, you know, you need to, you know, you're not treating me right. You know, don't yell at me in front of the kids, whatever it is. When you feel you can't do that, and you think it's pleasing to God, do you think it would be okay for your husband to yell at God? And if you think God's pleased with that, and you not saying anything, and allowing, he might have put you in that situation just so you would stand up to this guy you married, so he would learn not to yell at people. And we could go on and on about, this is just one of those examples that keeps on coming up, where especially women, you know, men are supposed to have it all together in the Christian church. You know, you don't need to read books on how to have a good marriage. And it's amazing how to have a good marriage, women are the ones who buy those books. And they're the ones who read them, and they're the ones who try them and try to get their men to behave like good husbands by, quote unquote, being the best wife I can be, because that's pleasing to God, and God will reward me by changing my husband, or I'll get jewels in my crown, or he'll make me feel good. Now, there may be times when God says, submit to him, submit to your husband in this area. But it's very likely if that's all you hear. If you never hear, you need to correct your husband in this area. You have the authority in this area. You have the wisdom. You have the knowledge. You need to stand up for this. What if he was just one of your friends and you saw him doing something destructive? Wouldn't you step in? Don't be thinking that God thinks the way you think, that God is believing what you believe. When we start to see the distinction between rest and passivity or submission, in especially among women, we have to learn to overcome our own beliefs about who we are in this earth. And this is not about feminism, because all feminism does is exalt the gender, where in many ways Christian tradition exalts the male gender. I'm talking about ignoring gender. God doesn't treat women different than he treats men. Because your body is staying here. And that's where your gender is. In your soul, in your mind, will, and emotions, you are not male or female. In your spirit, you are not male or female. The only place you're male or female is in your body. In your soul, your male and femaleness, we often interpret our temperament to be related to gender. For instance, if the man is strong emotional in his emotional temperament, which is the way God made him, he's often confused because it does not match up with the stereotypical, this is what a man is. And so he may have to spend his life or try to spend his life trying to overcome the way God made him, rather than recognizing, no, you can be emotional and creative and loving and giving and generous and all these female attributes and tender and observant and yet be a strong man. They have no correlation other than what we give them. But all these things start to come out when we start to recognize when we're at rest and when we're not. And this is one of those things we are learning to deal with as we go through the process of getting healed, getting those wounds dealt with. Because it's one of those hindrances. If we don't recognize and press in to rest, you know, the kingdom is taken by force. Again, the kingdom is not built, it's entered. And we enter it through rest. It's there, it's in your midst, it's in your middle, it's in your belly, where your spirit is. Now, very often we think of the opposite of rest being stress. You know, where we are anxious. And when you're in that situation, when you're not at rest, your wounds and your need for healing become the most apparent. And we start by really acknowledging our different levels of stress, our different levels of anxiety, by how we react to not knowing what to do or how to respond to a situation. If you think you have to have an answer or you have to know what to do in the situation, odds are you're trying to do God's job. You're not at rest. It's okay to not have an answer or a response or not know what to do. It's God's job to provide each one of us with whatever knowledge, whatever training, whatever understanding, whatever provisions we might need in order to grow independence, get healed, and enter that rest, that restful state of being. A lot of times when we are facing a problem, the best place to start is just by simplifying it. What's really going on? Knowing God, entering his rest, is not very complicated. Though it doesn't come easy to our soul, and we very often, this is where the struggle is, because your soul is used to having its own way. So one of the things rest will do is show us where we're not at rest, so that we can learn to recognize that whatever that anxiety is, it's a red flag. And so we're going to look not at the anxiety, but what's causing it, because it will show us what, show us an area where we are trying to do God's job. And this is especially, this is one of those distinctions, you cannot remove your flesh. And you can't remove others either. But God, one of my favorite illustrations is, you know, don't rock the boat. But if God's rocking it, don't try to stop it. This goes back to in a marriage relationship. If God's trying to rock your spouse's boat, don't try to stop it. God may want to use you to rock that boat. And if you think, well, it's your job to keep it from rocking or to, you know, be the peacemaker, you're not making it better. You're acting contrary to God. We are also learning, besides that anxiety is a red flag, showing us we are trying to do God's job, we're also learning to distinguish the rest of dependence from the inactivity of avoidance. This is something we learn by experience. But then again, this is, you know, especially in marriages. And I just had several emails. I just want to address some of these things. That very often marriages turn into role-playing because the reality has been swallowed up by life circumstances and wounds that have not been addressed. Most people, most men and women do not go into marriage thinking, okay, I'm going to live the rest of my life this way. And whenever he says jump, I'm going to say how high. And whenever she says, whenever I have a need, she's going to meet it. There was something that drew them together. And very often it's lost in misconceptions of what a Christian, if we can use that term, Christian marriage. But recognize that any relationship you're in is God's training ground. And he put you together with that person so you could learn to both submit and exercise authority in that relationship. Not over the person. But then again, you're not submitting to that person either because you're a partner. And working together with someone else is one of the hardest things to do which is why it's such great opportunity to learn to depend on God and enter that rest. So thanks for the great questions. Hope I've addressed some of those concerns, some of those questions. Know that you're not alone. The anxiety that comes from having our expectations not met, what we want to look at is, are those expectations from God or are they from someone else? So thanks for tuning in. Spend this week asking the Lord to train you how to enter into his rest. You can always drop me a line at diane@weCanPrepare.org, and have a great weekend.